Welcome to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. This is where songwriters find inspiration every time. Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. My name is Carl Brody. I'm the author of The Free Thinking Songwriter, and I'm talking to you from the clifftops of Sydney. Not that I can see much from the clifftops today. We've got a rainy day for the first time in a while. It's been glorious here the last few weeks, and today my window's covered in rain, and I can just make out the ocean. It's about 100 meters in front of me. The cliff face is about 50 meters from my window, and there's a sheer drop there. There is a fence. Don't worry about me. I'm okay. And I can see, just make out the ocean, the surface of the ocean, and usually I can see right over to the horizon, and it's just beautiful. But today is, I think I'm in a cloud. I'm actually in a cloud on the clifftops today, talking to you around the world. Thanks for being here. I'm so grateful that you keep coming back. And I'm so grateful that this podcast seems to be gaining in momentum across the globe. It's amazing. Now, what is it today? It's February the 4th, 2014. And my last podcast was just before I left town, I think in the middle of January, around the 18th or 19th. I left to make for the Tamworth Country Music Festival, where I'm sure if you're a regular listener, you will know that I was really happy to be nominated for Alt Country Album of the Year at the Golden Guitar Awards. Now, they're like the sort of pinnacle event, pinnacle sort of... A lot of people in Australia aspire to that if you're in the realms of country music, whether you're on the fringes or not, like I am. And it's a really amazing reward to be nominated. Now, I won't tell you that I'm not disappointed that I didn't win, but I can tell you that my disappointment didn't last for long. I was so happy to be there. It was an amazing event that I should have asked someone what the attendance was actually at the awards, but it was definitely in the thousands. It's a massive arena at the Trek Entertainment Centre up there. And the red carpet experience was really exciting. And the awards show itself was great. There's some great performances. And a bunch of my friends deservedly won golden guitars. I'm really proud of them, happy for them. And like I say, my disappointment didn't last long. I had a great night. The experience on the red carpet was something I've been through before. And you sort of, I don't take it for granted because it is exciting. And this year was no exception. I had feelings beforehand. I was reminded of a couple of years ago in one of my roles in the music industry. If you're a regular listener, you'll know that I've worn many hats in the music industry, both here in Australia and back in the UK. And so I've worked within the industry as well as right throughout. I've been a songwriter and touring recording artist. So I've had I've come at this industry from a lot of different angles. And I was reminded when I was thinking about, well, in anticipation and in excitement about the awards night and the red carpet, I was thinking about a moment I had a couple of years ago when I was, I wasn't supposed to be in this role, but I was the meet and greet guy for all the stars that were arriving for a massive awards ceremony in Sydney. And I was just supposed to, you know, I was the relationship manager for all the songwriters and in this role. So when they arrived, I was to meet and greet them. Just if I didn't know them already, I was to introduce myself and then guide them to the next person who would then liaise with the publicist to get them onto the red carpet and in front of the cameras as smoothly as possible before they entered the dining room for the awards ceremony. And that was pretty exciting. It's kind of out of my comfort zone being that guy, because ultimately I'm a songwriter and a muso. And so I would go, you know, they would be guided towards me. I would meet and greet them and then send them to the next stage of their red carpet experience, which was to get in front of all the flashlights. And it was okay. I didn't really get a kick out of it, apart from two amazing things that happened that night. What the first one was, and I can still have to pinch myself remembering this, but I was actually personally introduced to Cat Stevens, to Yusuf Islam. And that was one of the most exciting moments I'll ever have, because I'm sure if you listen to this show, you'll agree that, you know, there is one songwriter that is incomparable. And he himself was just a gentle, lovely man. He didn't seem like he was in a hurry to move on to the next person he was going to meet. He had a really kind smile and a gentle handshake, and he introduced me to his son. And of course, in moments like that, when you are actually meeting a living legend, there's stuff going on in your mind that prevents you from being as natural and relaxed as you'd like to be in a situation like that. But I think that I was pretty cool. I think I was pretty calm. And it was an amazing moment for me. The other moment for me, which was really exciting, was so after a lot of the mainstream current stars had come through and I had guided them onto to the red carpet. By the way, inadvertently, I became that second person as well, because somehow there was a person missing in the chain that was to take the artists down to the publicist to let the publicist know who was coming next. And, you know, there was supposed to be a middle person there, but no one was there, so I just assumed that role. And so I would meet and greet them and then run over to the publicist and say, okay, next up we've got Yusuf Islam and his son. Once all the main stars of that time, it was a couple of years ago, 2011 or 2012 maybe. I think it was in May or June of 2012. Yeah. I then spotted one of my favorite songwriters ever coming along with his wife, and that was Neil Finn from Crowded House. So I walked up to him. I introduced myself quite confidently and calmly, because I know about the guy, and I know he's a great guy, and he's a real sort of genuine person, as well as being one of the most brilliant songwriters ever to walk the planet. And also, we have a friend in common. The guy that I've been managed by for the last almost 10 years is a really good friend of his, and he used to be his tour manager, and that's my friend Skip. So I walked up to him and introduced myself, and then I mentioned Skip straight away, just to sort of so that I wasn't some industry guy that was going to bore him, because that goes on a lot, that happens a lot. And I could see that they're both Neil and his wife relaxed, and I'm like, oh, they asked me how Skip was doing, because I'd seen him more recently. And I said, oh, you guys are up on the red carpet next. And I saw straight away that that wasn't his thing. And this is a guy who has achieved most of the things you can achieve as a songwriter. In other words, he's written incredible songs that have moved many, many listeners across the world for decades now. And, you know, he doesn't have anything to prove. He doesn't need to be on the red carpet. He doesn't need to be interviewed on the red carpet, and he doesn't need to have his photograph taken. He's the man. And immediately he was like, oh no, I'd rather not do that. And I didn't argue, even though it was kind of my role to push them towards the red carpet for the press and for all the media. I semi hid the fact that they had arrived, and I walked them around, sort of shielding them just with my presence, and walked them right around the red carpet to miss all the shenanigans and all the kerfuffle with the red carpet, and walked them into the dining room into the awards room, I found them their table and let them go and quietly, anonymously sit down and watch the show. And so I was thinking about that before I was headed to the red carpet and thinking, you know, why is it that I'm so excited about being on the red carpet for these awards? And I can be like Neil. I can be that cool. But then I thought, to heck with that. This is I've had a few opportunities as a nominated artist myself. That was my fourth time, actually. Fourth time being nominated for a major award. And, you know, the biggest thing that I got from that was there were two things. I was so proud and excited to be walking the red carpet with my girlfriend. I thought it's a nice thing for anyone to get the opportunity to dress up and make the most of a glamour sort of occasion. So that was beautiful. And by the way, she was an absolute natural. And the other thing was my son, my youngest son, Travis, was in the audience at the red carpet with the crowd that had gathered to listen to the interviews and watch us arrive and so on. And I was just so, it was an amazing thing for me because, you know, there was my little boy shouting dad, you know, and I waved to him especially a couple of times and talked to him, as well as being stopped about three times for interviews and then for a million photographs. So it was, I want to be as cool as Neil Finn, of course I do, but it was a really cool experience, and I made the most of it, we made the most of it, and I was really proud to be there to do something memorable from our wee boy. So that was really exciting. And if you're interested in seeing any of those, by the way, I haven't mentioned it, I don't think, that I'm an avid Instagrammer, and you can find me at Karl Brody, KARLBROADIE, at Karl Brody. And I take a lot of photographs of, I love landscape photography, and I take a lot of photographs wherever I travel. But there's a couple of photographs on there of us on the red carpet if you're interested in having a look there. And if you follow me, I'll follow you back, because that's what I like doing. So I'm really happy to be talking to you today. It was something that crossed my mind when I was heading up to that festival. As you know, I do several festivals a year, and I thought I might share some of my thoughts on what I was hoping to achieve from the festival before I headed up to the Tamworth annual get together. And I came up with five things that I thought were humble and smart goals to aim to achieve from a live show if you're a performance songwriter. And this might not be for everyone in terms of, you know, you could very well be a songwriter that just writes for other people. That's actually how I started out. Before I ever got in front of a microphone myself, I was writing songs for other people back in London. And I know hundreds of songwriters. I know of hundreds, and personally, I know a fair few songwriters who never get on stage, and that's fine. And I thought that these thoughts, you can get a lot from them, even if it's just another way that you want to approach your songwriting. And also, you could share them with friends or share them with the artists that sing your songs. Or it might just sort of steer you in a nice way with your writing to keep these thoughts in mind. Now, I like to think of this stuff as, how do I put it? So as being from Scotland, inevitably I was led to the game of golf. It didn't actually happen while I was in Scotland, although I might have had a few muckabout games. But once I moved to London, my brother got me heavily into golf, and I was never very good. I was okay, but he was brilliant. And my brother's one of these people who his devotion and dedication and motivation to any of his interests is contagious, and I was always a recipient of that, or a victim of that in some cases. Like at 5 a.m. when he used to wake me up to tell me that we had to get up now to get our ball in the chute so we could get a game of golf as the sun was rising. And I remember being bleary-eyed and in my morning state, telling him that it was him that was into golf and not me. But it has been amazing for me, him being like that. He's virtually every fad he's been into over the years. In one way or another, I've followed suit. And even most recently, he's into astrophotography. So he's taking these incredible photos of the night sky. And he's even got me thinking, you know, about how good my camera would function on the slower shutter speeds and so on. But my reference to golf is something that it's an approach I came up with when I used to play. So if you're familiar with golf, you've got 18 holes and each hole is, you know, a par 5 or par 3 or par 4. And the idea is to either take fewer shots than the par. So if it's a par 5, if you come in with 4 shots, get it in the hole, that's a birdie, 1 under. And so at the end of the round, however many over par you are is your score, or however many under par is your score. But what I used to do, because it's quite a frustrating game, as well as being a beautiful game that if you are in the right mindset, you can approach it with a very zen-like approach. And I used to treat every hole as a par 5. And that way, I wouldn't be disappointed unless I had some really terrible holes and, you know, just in the bunker, in the river, 14 chips to get out of the sand, you know, that kind of thing. I used to treat every hole as a par 5 because then I gave myself a bit of leeway, and I would, most of the time, I wasn't too disappointed with my score, and that was always over par, by the way. I never became very good, but I was pretty happy. I was pretty happy with the standard I got to as a youngster. I haven't played for a while. I played a few years ago, but that was a beer-fueled, crazy bucks party, stag party, bachelor party. Just trying to cover all my bases here. So these 5 goals for a performance songwriter that I want to talk about, I think that the best way to approach this is that if you achieve even one of these before you set out on a bunch of dates or even for one show, and it might be one show in a rubbish venue where there's very little chance of you coming away from it rejoicing at your performance. There's just 5 things I think that be great to think about, and I know that I apply these, and if I achieve one of them, I feel amazing, and if I achieve all 5 of them, then it gives me an enormous sense of self-satisfaction and well-being. So I'll start with number 1. I think that the first thing we should aim to achieve, which is pretty obvious, is for a warm audience response. And to be well received is an amazing thing to take away from a gig. If you can achieve that, then anything else that happens that might be a tick is a bonus. So, you know, we all experience all kinds of shows when we get up on stage. We experience the ones where we think no one's listening to us, and we experience the shows where we might even have friends and family there, so it's just always going to be a warm response. But I think that even if it is friends and family who you expect that from, if you take that away from there, then that's a beautiful thing to aspire to, and it's something that we should be grateful for. We can walk on and, you know, we might even have won a new fan or several new fans. I think it's just aiming for a warm response is definitely the first thing I would think of. And there's a lot of different ways of achieving that. And firstly, you've got to hope for the best. You've got to hope that luck is on your side, because you just never know what kind of audience you're going to get. However, the main thing I would suggest and recommend is that we consider our songs, and we read the room and apply ourselves to structuring our set in a way that we think would fit that room. There's no good just playing a set that's written down on a piece of paper if it doesn't suit the audience. And if you've got the songs so that you can mess with that, you might, even if you only got the same number of songs, and maybe just resequence them, put them in a different sequence, just depending on how your room's looking and feeling. And most importantly, if you're interested in a warm response, then being self-indulgent is the opposite action to what you should be taking. We need to be connecting emotionally with the audience. We need to be sharing, and we need to show them that we're letting them into our personalities as songwriters. And it's not always easy. That's the whole point. We need to receive warmth. We have to give warmth. We can't be too cool for school. We don't want to look at our shoes, and we certainly don't want to do what one particular artist has done a couple of times when he's come to Sydney. And look, I really respect him as a songwriter, but there was one time where he had all the lights off and just faced his amplifiers the whole night, didn't talk to the audience once. So I think that that may or may not have affected his career. It's not important right now. I think that what's important is that we aspire to a warm response each and every time we get on stage. That there can't be anything possibly wrong with that, and there can be something wrong with trying to be too cool for your audience. So that's number one, a warm audience response. Number two, I think that it's a healthy, really healthy, it's something we shouldn't take for granted. And I think that this is a bonus. If you leave a live performance with this, it's an absolute bonus. And it's number two is a one devoted new fan. It's an amazingly, it's a massively underrated goal for performance songwriters. We would obviously love to convert the whole room. We'd obviously love to convert more than one. But if you think of it in terms of one devoted new fan, then a devoted fan is going to continue with the best possible promotion we could ever have after a gig, which is to tell their friends. Word of mouth is everything. To be considered a favorite by anyone is incredible. And that means we've touched someone. That means we've moved someone with our art. It means we can rest assured that what we're doing is not meaningless. It's meaningful, and we've carried that out in a live performance setting. They can then take that and spread the word. And even if they don't, they're going to be involved in your career from that moment on. They're going to come back. They're going to support you. So just remembering that can multiply in a matter of days. That's the reality of such a committed devotee. That's also may or may not happen, but it would be incredible if it did, right? So I think our aim should be to get one new devoted fan for our songs and our music. Number three. Now, why wouldn't we want a nice audience reaction during at least one song in the set? You know, those memorable moments, those moments during a song when the crowd erupts, or when something extraordinary happens. Those are the things we talk about beyond the show. Those are the things that stay with us. Those are the things that are memorable. I'm thinking, you know, sing-alongs. If you haven't got the songs that are so conducive to crowd participation, then it's so easy to create that. We don't have to stick to the songs exactly the way we're written when we're performing them live. There's always somewhere throughout your set where you can find something that's really simple. If you haven't already got the kind of choruses or breakdowns that are conducive to that, you can pick a line that's going to be easy to get the crowd to join in on. Now, I'm sure we've all seen those embarrassing times when the crowd doesn't join in. So what? You know, that happens. One of the reasons it happens so often, I've noticed, is because the audience are not familiar with the song in the first place, and the part that the artist is asking them to sing along to is really complicated. I've seen it happen a lot recently, where I've been watching in disbelief that the artist expects the audience to sing along to a four-line chorus that they've, most of them have never heard before. And it doesn't have to be that difficult. You just pick a one-liner or one word. Pick words that aren't even in the song just to get the crowd involved. And I have actually been surprised and impressed over the years where I've discovered that more audience members want to be involved than you might think, than you might imagine. People are out at a gig to enjoy themselves. And they can take something home with them that is just that little bit different. Something extraordinary that, you know, the peak of their night, something that happened during that night that they'll remember. So I really think there's something in that, an audience reaction during at least one of your songs in your set, a memorable moment. You know, things like when someone pulls out a harmonica, a blues harp, it usually gets a cheer. If it happens halfway through a song, it usually gets a cheer. And you know what? You can even announce that. You can even tell your audience before you start, you can say, okay, I'm sharing one of my tips here, by the way, and it works every single time. And I've done it in some of the best venues around Australia, and it's just such a great feeling. Who cares if it was staged? You can tell your audience before you start that during this song, you're going to pull out the blues harp and play. And when that happens, can you please make me feel special and cheer? Because it's always cool when people cheer during a song. Actually tell them what you want them to do and they will do it. And it's a beautiful thing. And I've had some, like I say, even though it's staged, I've had some, you know, goosebump moments from that happening. It's awesome. I would really recommend it. Whether it's, you know, I'm going to play banjo in this song, or, you know, I'm going to do an a cappella part, whatever it is that you decide on, give your audience something to remember. It really is worth it. So that's number three, an audience reaction during at least one of the songs in your set. You're going to play around 7 or 8 at least, right? You might be playing 20. There's got to be a moment in there that you can find something that will have lasting impact. Okay, number four, a warm response to your in-between song banter. Memorable entertainment other than your actual songs. Now, this is something that when I started playing live, I don't think I was very good at this. And guess what? I don't think anyone is very good at this when they first start. Some people have a natural charm that is memorable, but mostly when we all start out, we're a little nervous. It sounds a little contrived, or it's unnecessary blabbing and rambling. So I think that, you know, there's negatives to this as well. I've seen an artist tour on two tours consecutively, and I've seen them tell the exact same stories before each song. I don't recommend that. However, if you are playing in different towns or different venues each night, you can tell the same story. One of the approaches I like to take is I try and mix it up and use different words to tell the same story. I do that more for myself because the only people really that are going to know are your opening act or the act that you're supporting, or the crew or your manager or whoever's traveling with you. They're the only ones that are going to sit there and go, oh, that's exactly the same as last night. So I mix it up for myself. You know, I just phrase the story differently, and just try and use different language to tell the same story. But that's not necessary. You can tell the same story that as a forerunner for your song every time. And a little bit of humor helps, but I'm kind of on the fence about how we're expected to be comedic entertainers as well in between songs. We're already songwriters and we need to get a laugh. But look, work on it. There's nothing wrong with working on your stories, finding things that, you know, can snap the audience out of their the place they were before you started talking to them. I think it's really good. There's lots of stories I've heard over the years in between songs, and sometimes unrelated to the songs entirely, that are very memorable. And that's another thing that you take away from that you can take, the audience can take away from your show, a little insight to your personality. You know, you're peeling back the layers a little bit and letting them see what you're like as a normal person, because really we're on stage, we're that, you know, enigma. We're kind of the untouchable until we start talking, until we, you know, you can tell a story that is unrelated to the song, and you can even say, I know that has nothing to do with this next song that's coming up, but we're here to get to know each other, right? So I just thought I'd share that. It could be about your day, or it could be about something that is that happened to you that day that reminded you of something that has happened to you. And if you are worried about whether or not you think an audience is interested whatsoever in the stories you want to tell, run it by someone close. You know, we're never going to know until we validate it. I've never personally done that, but I have told stories that have bombed. And I thought twice about telling them again. And this is all part of it, though. This is all part of it. And you got to remember as well, even if you tell a story that bombs, you're creating a memorable moment. And if that's embarrassing, then that's just a disappointing part of your night that you can get over pretty quickly. It's not going to take away from the quality of your songs. It's not going to take away from the night. But just if you are unsure about the stories you want to tell in between songs, run it by a friend. Run it by a friend, or run it by someone online. Just say, or maybe not. Maybe you should keep it a personal message and just run it by someone. I once saw a show with comedians trying out their jokes, and we see them with the jokes they've already tried and tested. 9 times out of 10, that's what we see. They've already done that work. And this was a very famous comedian, Lenny Henry, a British guy. I saw a series where he was just basically with a trial audience. And, you know, he wasn't always funny, but that's why he was doing it. So a warm audience response to your in-between song banter is something we should aspire to, and it doesn't have to be in between every song. In fact, it's pretty cool if you do it a couple of times and then you go 3 songs in a row without saying a word, and then you come back and talk again. And it doesn't have to be a long-winded story every time either. You can just share a couple of thoughts, crack a couple of gags if it's appropriate, maybe not right before a really sad song, however you choose to do it, but I do recommend it. And it's something that my manager was on at me at for a long time before I started to do it naturally. He didn't think I spoke enough in between songs, and then eventually I found a place. I was kind of defiant, and eventually I found a place where I felt natural in doing that rather than forcing it. And I think that that's, it's highly, I recommend it to get yourself comfortable with making the night more enjoyable for you as well. You kind of, you're just sharing a bit more yourself with the audience that way. So I hope this is helping you. And it's just, you know, like I say, it's not for everyone, but it is something you can keep in mind. And I know that at least one of these points will definitely transform your live experience in some way. It might be in a small way, but every little small step helps. So the fifth and final point I wanted to make about what we should be aiming for humbly and in a smart way towards our live performance. It's not all about the sale. It's definitely not all about the income. And if it is, I'm imagining you probably wouldn't be listening to this podcast in the first place. But I do think it's healthy to aspire to your audience taking some of your music away with them beyond the live experience. In other words, yes, it's nice to sell CDs at a live show. I never have false hopes with this stuff, because most of the time we're disappointed with that, if that's what we're aiming for. And you know, it can affect your performance. You do not want to be thinking about how many CDs you're going to sell. Look, there's a couple of tricks we can do. Not tricks, but tips. Like, for example, your merch desk always does better when it's near the exit. If people have to walk across to the other side of the room before they leave, then there's a very strong chance they're not going to make that trip. And it might only be across the other side of the room. But if they're walking past the merch desk, there's a very good chance, and especially if you're standing there after the show. I learned that the hard way with some tours I've done, where I thought it was cooler for me to stay back around backstage in the dressing room. And then, you know, I've trialed and tested that one, and it's nice to go out there. It might be a bit overwhelming. I know that I'm in a certain sort of subdued mood after a gig because I put a lot into my shows emotionally. But if you can put up with that, and it can be pleasant as well, if you can put up with going out there and talking to your audience briefly, it's easy to move on if you don't want to spend too much time with one audience member. But it can be the difference of them taking home your CD or not. First of all, they think you're amiable and personable enough to want to... They've already liked your music because they wouldn't be standing at the merch desk if they didn't. And sometimes even if they didn't like the gig that much, because you're friendly and personable, they'll take your CD home. Hopefully they did like your gig though. So a good approach is to just consider, you know, 10% CD sales. If you look at your audience and you think that would be amazing if I could sell to 10% of these, then if you think about it, you've got if there's 200 people there, then you've got 20 audience members taking a CD home, and each one of those may well play that CD to 20 of their friends, 10 of their friends, 5 of their friends, 1 of their friends. It all helps. And look, you know, even aspiring to less than 10% is good. But I think that 10% is something that if we achieve, we should be very, very proud of ourselves. And it's definitely something that would that can really help in spreading the word of our music, which is, with the abundance of all the digital marketing techniques and so on, there's just so much. How does one music lover focus when there's so many releases every day? And that's not an exaggeration. There must be hundreds and hundreds of new albums released every day, because I could do it now. I could stop recording. I record these podcasts on Pro Tools, and I use a really good microphone. I'm lucky because I'm sponsored by Shure, so they gave me it's a live condenser microphone actually, but it's brilliant for virtually everything. It's a Shure KSM-9. And so I'm sitting here recording on Pro Tools, but it could be GarageBand. And I could finish this podcast, grab my guitar, which is about, hang on, I'll show you how close it is to me. Okay, I had to stretch, but my guitar's just there. When I finish recording this podcast, I could play a song and I could put it through a bit of a compressor and an EQ and one of the little mastering presets I've got, and I could go to TuneCore or CD Baby and upload it, and within 24 hours it would be available on iTunes in 8 different countries, and then over the next 7 days it will be on Spotify and Pandora and Amazon and everything, anywhere I wanted it. And I could do that within the next half hour if I wanted to. That's what we're talking about here. It's crazy, and it's beautiful as well, because it means that a lot more new music is being discovered, and a lot of talented people out there that wouldn't otherwise be discovered can be heard. So I think that aspiring to 10% of CD sales to your audience is definitely a healthy goal, and a smart goal, and a humble goal, really, when you consider that if there's 200 people there or 100 people there, you would like them all to take your music home. It's humble. You only want 10 of them. That's enough. Any more, of course, is a bonus and is wonderful. And I think the most I've sold at one show was 37, and I was delighted. What does that mean? You know, what does that mean when you sell 37 CDs at a show? I find it hard to fathom. And I think recently I came close to that again, and I was just so chuffed. It's amazing. All those people taking my music home. It's amazing. What a feeling. Okay, I think I've rambled on. We're almost at the 40-minute mark. And look, thank you so much again for being here. I'm going to come back to you soon. I took a little while. I've been doing so much since I got back from the festival that it's taken me a while to get around to recording another podcast. But I'm working on lots of stuff that I'm going to tell you about. You may remember Michael Roberts in episodes 8 and 9. We mentioned in our conversation about this series of books on songwriting that he's working on. Well, he's really close to releasing the first volume, and I'm really excited because it's a real insight into the early days of some of the greatest songwriters that will ever live. And I've been lucky enough to read what he's up to, and it's so inspirational, so incredible. It's stuff that I haven't even read before. I'm not sure how a man can retain so much information, but as you know from episodes 8 and 9, he's a brilliant man, and he just has a lot to share, and I'm so pleased for him. I'm proud of him that he's finally getting down to putting pen to paper and sharing these amazing insights. So I've been helping him with that. We're sort of in that together as far as getting it out there goes. And I'm really excited to let you know that the film I've made for you is almost in completion. I think it's just color grading now. It's called Your Next Brilliant Song, and I'll share more about that with you later. And also, today's Tuesday, and that means that I'm heading down tonight to the bunker in Coogee, which is a beach about 10 minutes away from where I am now. And I run a songwriter's night there called the Bunker Songwriter Sessions. It's a beautiful night, and it's a really supportive community of songwriters sharing old and new songs. I open the night with 3 songs. I close the night with 3 songs. And in between, I showcase all my guests with their new and old songs. And it really is amazing. We've been doing it for 6 months now. Well, since the beginning of July last year. And it's just, it makes me really proud that I can take what I do online and translate that into the physical space where I'm providing a stage for songwriters and for songwriters to get together as well. I've got a beautiful PA. It's a really cool room, all kinds of mismatching furniture and great sound. And the people there, the venue, are really supportive. They look after us. And it's great that it's building. So if you are around the area in Coogee, I know that most of the listeners to this show, the majority of listeners to this show, are in the United States, but we also have listeners in Sweden. Hey, in Sweden. Hey, in Scotland. Hey, I could keep going. It's so amazing. It's great that I can do this in the physical down in Coogee at the Bunker Sessions. So if you are in town, come along any Tuesday night and come and say hey when you arrive. And if you're a songwriter, then I'll squeeze you on. Because I've become the master at scheduling songwriters on a live night when there's only 3 hours to give. Thanks so much, everyone. It's been great talking to you. Thanks for listening to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. And I will speak to you again very soon. I hope you're writing songs right now. And if you were stuck, I hope this podcast has helped you in some way. And I hope that this topic on live performance and performing songwriters wasn't too far from what you would like to ordinarily hear on this podcast. But I'm sure that there was something in there that was of worth to you. All the best. I'll speak to you soon. Stay safe out there.